This podcast is part of the Everyday Heroes Podcast Network, the network for first responders and those who support them.
Because as optimistic as I sound, I certainly get discouraged, and it bothers me when people say that I'm anti-police because it's in my blood. I don't know that you'll find someone more pro-police than me.
Welcome to the Off Duty Podcast, the podcast where we interview the men and women of law enforcement and help you to learn about the person behind the badge. If this is your first time tuning in, thank you. My name is Anthony McNeil, retired police officer and your host. Let's get started.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to episode number 72 of the Off Duty Podcast. Once again, it's me, your boy, Anthony McNeil, back with a super fantastic guest joining me here on the podcast. I think this gentleman is the second chief that I may have had on the podcast. I think I've had one prior to this, but he has 8 years in law enforcement. He spent the last 2 years as the chief of the Huntington University Campus Police and Safety out of the state of Indiana. I'm happy to have joining me today, Chief Kirsch Cochran. Did I get it right?
You sure did. Nailed it. No, I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, thank you for joining me. I appreciate you taking time out of your day to come on here and speak with me, Chief. If you've listened to the previous episode, you know how I start every episode off. Chief, why law enforcement?
That's a great question. I think our why is something that all police officers need to know. That's what motivates us to get out of bed each morning and do this job. So for me, I'm third generation law enforcement. My dad's the chief of police currently. My uncle served two terms as an elected sheriff, currently a deputy mayor. I grew up around law enforcement. However, I bucked that. I wanted to be the first person in my family to go to college. And so that's what I did. And I pursued a degree in broadcast journalism. And my goal was to be the play-by-play announcer for the New York Yankees. That did not happen.
Not a bad goal, though.
Yeah, right? But I did, and I'm very, very proud that I did graduate from college with a communications degree, trying to work my way up, worked in minor league baseball for 3 years in the Padres organization and the Pirates organization. And then I was offered a job with NBC, worked for NBC. As I was working for NBC, Michael Brown was shot and killed by Officer Darren Wilson. And I remember watching the Ferguson unrest at 25 years old. And I know it sounds naive, but for me, growing up in a small white town in southern Indiana, sort of having the veil of white privilege ripped in my life and realizing that not everyone thinks police officers are the good guys. Having grown up in a law enforcement family, I grew up walking around the jail or hanging out with my dad or seeing other police officers. They're the good guys. And it kind of blew my mind to realize not everyone thinks that way. And I wanted to learn more about why that is. And then sort of the weird natural progression was, well, I got to fix this. And so I guess I was 25 years old with no prior military law enforcement experience. I'm a little guy, like a 140-pound white guy at the time. I said, I'm going to sign up. Let's do it. And so I applied for the Fort Wayne Police Department. And that's when we were not having trouble finding police officers. There were about 1,400 applicants in my process. Wow. And they seated 28 of us in the academy. And glory to God, I was picked. And 21 of us graduated the rigors of police academy. Worst 20 weeks of my life, as anyone would say. And for 5 years, that's what I did. I worked in a very multicultural area of Fort Wayne, immersed myself in it. And I don't know. Like I said, I saw a problem and I'm working to fix it. And then about 2 years ago, my alma mater, Huntington University, reached out and said, we're looking for a chief of police. And I said, listen, I'm 29 years old. I'm still trying to figure out this job. I had 5 years under my belt working the road and went and applied. And I honestly, like most cops, I thought I was going to do my 20 years and be good to go and figure out something else after that. But being appointed chief was a pretty awesome honor, and I'm humbled by it. And I've got, I think, 18 of the best officers that work under me, and they have really responded well to having a young guy as a police chief. Some of them have been policing, quite frankly, longer than I've been alive. And wow. I have so much to learn from them that I try not to look at myself as a manager, but a fellow officer. And they've really responded well, and I have a great relationship with my guys.
That's awesome. So you were 29 when you became chief, you said?
That's correct.
Okay, yeah, because Chief Smith, who was the other chief that I had on the podcast, I think he was 29 when he became chief also.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I don't know what you guys are drinking over there, but...
That's awesome.
But that's good because, you need that young blood in the profession. I think you guys are closer to what's going on in the world today. And it's nice to have that fresh blood in there, someone that can relate to the current times, who hasn't been jaded by the past, and is awesome. Now, your dad, as you said, is a police chief himself. How long has he been a chief?
Oh, that's a good question. So, man, he's going to listen to this and be mad at me that I got it wrong. I think he's going on probably 3 or 4 years. I think he got a point about a year before I did.
Okay. Now, I have to ask, you brought up the Mike Brown situation, and that was part of what sparked you to turn towards the profession. Once that incident took place and you got into law enforcement, did you feel like you were now in a position to start making that change, or did reality hit and say, this is going to be harder than I thought?
Yes to both of those, right? I think I did realize, man, this is going to be harder than I thought, but I realized that the story of race and policing in America, we did not get here overnight, right? And it's not going to be solved overnight. And I think our instant gratification culture in America right now wants to just, okay, how do we fix this? Let's fix it. Let's flip the switch and fix it. And that's not the way this is going to work. This happened through a multitude of tiny, tiny wounds over the course of time. And it's going to take a police officer going into a Black home and treating that home with respect and treating that person's perceptions of law enforcement with respect, knowing that, and I tell this story all the time, that knowing that the angry young Black man that I'm dealing with, his grandma, his grandpa went through the civil rights movement. And we take the stories of our grandparents as gospel. We may buck our parents and we may not listen to our parents, but grandma and grandpa, they are truth. They are the sages. They are full of wisdom. And if they can pull up a pant leg and say, these are the scars where the dog bit me when I was marching, right? Or whatever that may be, and tell those stories, that's impressionable. And that's the young men that we are policing. And we have to know that. And I just think that current law enforcement training doesn't necessarily teach that. I think modern day law enforcement training does a great job at teaching us how to deal with an angry Black man, but it doesn't teach us what made the Black man angry. And that is huge. We have to teach our police officers how we got here. And then maybe they can come into those situations with just an air of respect and understanding, because that's how reconciliation happens.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think that the profession cares how they became angry?
I think there is a generation of officers that does. I know it's funny. So when people hear me talk, I usually get labeled racist and anti-police, and I can't be either of those things, right? I think America is so polarized. I'm inevitably going to say something that's going to make someone go, he's not on my side, but this isn't about sides. And so I think it's been interesting to see how officers have responded to me. I've had some officers respond very, very negatively to me. And I've had some officers who maybe haven't wanted to say it, but have privately sent me messages or called me and say, hey, I got your back. I love what you're doing. But I just don't have the courage to stick my neck out there and do it. And I'm okay with that. And so does law enforcement care? You know, I hope, and I'm a hopeless idealist and I'm a dreamer, that there is a generation of officers that does care and wants to learn and wants to make it better. But I hesitate to paint law enforcement in one big brush, no matter if I'm saying something positive or negative. We are as diverse as the people we police. So I've seen officers on both sides of that. That felt like a cop-out answer, pun intended, but that's just where I'm at.
No, I get it, because it's funny, because a lot of my listeners are more on the conservative side. I know that. And I get both sides of the picture, being on both sides. I'm a black man. I'm a police officer, a retired police officer. And it didn't matter what color my skin was. To the people that I was dealing with, my race was blue. And to them, that was the enemy in a lot of cases. You know, I remember stopping a car, a young lady, no headlights on, and I wasn't going to write her a ticket or anything. I was just going to tell her headlights was off. I walk up to the car before I could say anything. She looks at me and she goes, "What the F are you stopping me for? I didn't do anything. You only stopping me because I'm black." No.
If it was at night, you know? Did you shine your flashlight on yourself? That.
So I don't think it's as much of a race thing on the surface as we make it to be. I think when people see the uniform, that's what they're against. And I always say every encounter leaves an impression, whether good, bad, or otherwise. And it's up to us as the officer to determine what that impression will be. Now, a large part of that falls on the person that we're dealing with, because they dictate the direction that conversation or that interaction goes. But it's up to us to learn how to handle it. And I brought this up on a previous podcast. I saw a post that someone made in a law enforcement support group. And it was an older post, but the officer, I don't remember his name or the state or anything where this incident happened, because it was a few years ago. But he stops a young black guy, and the guy was texting and driving. That's why he stopped him. He walks up to the car. The officer walks up to the car, and the young man in the car says, "Look, don't kill me. I'm afraid of the police, blah, 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 blah." That whole scenario. And the officer handled it tremendously. He says, "Look, I'm not here to hurt you. I'm here to help you. I want to see you grow up. I want your mom to see you grow up. I want you to do this. I want you to do that. I'm here to help you, blah, 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 blah." He went on and he turned something negative into a positive, because by the time they were done with that conversation, the young man was shaking his hand.
Hmm.
And that just goes back to what I just said. Every interaction leaves an impression. But I had to chime in that conversation, because some of the comments were very, very ignorant. And there were things like, "Well, his parents should teach him to respect the police," and things like that. And that wasn't the case. And that goes back to what you said. The why is he afraid? Fortunate for him, he ran into someone that took the time to show, "Hey, I'm just a human like you. I'm just here to help you. I'm not here to hurt you." And I think we have a long way to go in this profession in terms of that, but I think we're gaining ground. I think we're making headway. I mean, we've had some setbacks over time, but I think when there's the young blood that's coming in like yourself, I think it makes a difference. And I take my hat off to you for taking the stance that you take, because let's be honest, it's not a realistic or it's not a popular stance in the law enforcement community. And how have you been able to deal with all of that personally in terms of taking on that responsibility and the goals that you've set for the things that you want to achieve in the profession?
Yeah, there's a lot there. So I think my wife probably hears the most of it, because as optimistic as I sound, I certainly get discouraged, and it bothers me when people say that I'm anti-police, because it's in my blood. I don't know that you'll find someone more pro-police than me, but maybe pro-police looks a little different than what you think. You know, maybe pro police mm-hmm. is wanting to polish our reputation back to what it once was. Maybe being pro police is doing exactly like that story you just said. Instead of defending our reputation, which is what that officer could have done with that young man on the traffic stop, "I didn't pull you over," and then things get tense, right? It's like a marriage. If your wife yeah. perceives you to do something wrong and you get defensive and bark back at her, that's not going to work, right? Her perception right. is that you did, and perception is reality to us.
Reality.
And so you could do so much better by going, "Why do you think I'm going to hurt you?" Right? Just tell me why, or why were you angry at me before I walked up? And you'll hear a story. You almost always mm-hmm. you'll hear a story about the last police officer, about the news article, about the friend, about the loved one, about the cousin who was shot, whatever that may be, that is reality to them. And you could be the first person who looks like you to hear that story. We can be representative of that. And so there's so many stories like that. But for me to answer your original question on that is, I think I tend to get discouraged that people want to label me either way. And that's not the case. I mean, if you saw the emails that I sent my officers, it is nothing more. Do this, but please take care of yourself, right? Watch your back. How can I help? I never, ever, ever want to go to another police officer funeral. But the reality of this job is we're going to have to see the flag folded and hear the bagpipes again, probably, right? And that is frustrating that we have to decide currently, culture says we have to decide between pursuing racial reconciliation and supporting law enforcement, because those aren't mutually exclusive ideas. They're not mutually exclusive ideas. I can love police officers. I can subscribe to ODMP. I can go to the wall in DC, and I can also meet with Black clergy and young Black men and women, or volunteer at the Fort Wayne Urban League and do all of those things and say, okay, we can do both of these things. It doesn't make me racist. It doesn't make me anti-cop. It just makes me a human wanting to heal relationships.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, that's what it should be all about. Just everyone trying to heal. And I mean, I know that sounds kumbaya-ish, but
it is what it is.
But yeah, it and you're right. It is what it is. You know, I always pride myself when I worked. I was a no nonsense kind of person, but I was also a human. And I've shared this story before on the podcast, but my last week on the job, I was a hostage negotiator, and we had a very prominent pastor whose son was bipolar, and he was arrested. And when they took him up to the jail, he was causing all kind of problems, so they had to put him in isolation. And he goes back there and he starts flooding the toilets and all this stuff. So my lieutenant of the SWAT team, who was my lieutenant at the time, I was working the front desk, and he says, would you like to go up and talk to this gentleman? So they wanted to take him out of the cell. So I get upstairs in the jail, and as I'm stepping off the elevator, there's a young officer there that's going to be taking my place as a hostage negotiator. And he's wearing black gloves, and he has a taser in his hand. And I ask him, what are you doing? And he says, I'm going to talk to this guy to get him out of the cell. And I looked at him and I said, how effective of a conversation do you think that's going to be with a taser and a pair of black gloves in your hand? I said, our job as negotiators is to talk. And your communication skills are going to be lacking, because he's not going to be focusing on what you're saying. He's going to be looking at that taser in your hand, and you've already lost. Mm. It was funny because he was causing all this commotion simply because it goes back to communication. When he got arrested, his dog had not been fed, and he wanted someone to check on his dog, but no one took the time to ask him what was going on. And when he told me that, we went and fed his dog and had no more problems out of him the rest of the night.
That's awesome. That's it right there. I mean, that is, now did you, that's interesting, because when you went in without a taser and without gloves, did you feel more unsafe? Because that's some of the flack that I get sometimes, is that maybe I sacrifice tactics, and I don't believe that I do. In one of my speaking engagements, I told this story, and it caused a real ripple effect, because I think people misunderstood it. We were on a felony stop, and I never crossed the line of fire. I didn't walk up, but I holstered my gun. And we got like seven other guns on this car. But what I did in calling this guy out was physically show him my hands and say, hey, I'm going to call you by name, and I'm going to walk you step by step out of this car, because you had seven officers yelling and screaming at you. And when I told that story, some officers heard it. I can't believe you would holster your gun on a, you know, on a call like that, or on a felony stop and gang member and all this. And I'm confident someone would have got a shot. Yeah. I mean, I knew we had lethal cover, right? And so it's not that we're sacrificing tactics, but we're not necessarily keeping this rigidity, or we're not shackling ourselves to tactics where it keeps us from being versatile and communicating. Yeah. Because I assume in the situation you were in with that young man, if things would have gone south still and that wouldn't have worked, you would have had the tools, you would have had the backup and the resources to deal with that tactically as you saw fit, I would assume.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I didn't feel unsafe at all. I mean, the part of the story that I left out is this guy was 6'7", 240, 300 pounds or something. And he was bipolar on top of it. But no, I didn't feel unsafe at all because I felt confident in my ability. And I knew that in order to be effective, I had to get him to see me as someone other than a police officer.
Mm.
You know, and because he was already angry at the police.
Because they were ignoring him, right? They weren't hearing him. We all want to be heard. That's it. All humans want to be heard. And it's really hard to connect with someone at gunpoint or at taser point. And you realize that.
Yeah. And I think what you just said is kind of a picture of our society as a whole today. Nobody's listening to anybody. Everybody's in their own corners. They have their own beliefs and everything, but they're not interested in taking time and hearing what the other side has to say. And I think that's why, and I have a whole nother theory on that, because I think there are people in positions that want that to stay that way so that they can maintain their power and wealth and other things. But that's a whole nother conversation.
That's episode 2 right there.
But for the listener, I want to invite the chief back. And we had talked about this previously. I'm starting a new program here on the podcast. It's a VIP membership. And these are the types of topics that we're going to dive deep into. And I want to save this conversation for that episode, because I think there's a lot that we can unpack here. And I want to be respectful of your time. I know you're probably working there. And I want to go ahead and get into my first segment. But I hope that you agree that you can come back on with me and we can dive deeper into that conversation and some other things.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad that we were able to organically make a little piece for that episode. So I'm excited. That'd be awesome.
But listen, I want to go ahead. Like I said, I want to respect your time and I want to go ahead and jump into my first segment. And this is what I call Dig Deeper. And for those of you that have never listened to the podcast, Dig Deeper is where I get nosy and I go poking around my guests' social media and I pull out certain posts and I craft questions around those posts. And Chief, I have 3 or 4 posts of yours that I want to ask you questions about.
Only 3 or 4.
And the first.
Only 3 or 4. I'm surprised it's only 3 or 4.
The first one was a picture of you at the Indy 500 race and you were looking through a fence. Do you recall that post?
I do. Yeah.
Okay. And the caption on that post read, "I climbed the fence to get a glimpse at history. What you can't see is the yellow shirt pulling my leg, hair, and yelling at me to get off the fence. We exchanged pleasantries after Helio?
Helio Castroneves, yeah.
Okay. After Helio passed and I hopped down. And my first question to you around that post is, when you look back at your own history, what do you see?
Hmm. Yeah, that's awesome. That's an awesome question. So I think there was, and my dad still gives me a tough time with it, and it'll come out every now and then, but there was certainly a rebellious streak in me or honestly, the attitude that you still see that I give grace and I give all the honor to the Lord for shaping it in me, that ambition that I want, it's probably in a sense rebellion, right? I want to buck the idea that policing is one thing. I want to buck the idea that racial reconciliation is one thing. And that was misguided in my youth. And so did I certainly get in trouble. Now, to be fair, that post that you're referring to was just from this past May. It was not from that long ago. But that kind of situation, and it is a passion that I've had since I was a little kid. I grew up not too far from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. I've been going to the race since I was a little kid. And so I'd never seen someone win the Indy 500 4 times. Helio did that. I was very excited. So if this is a humanizing the badge, I'm a pretty big race fan. So what it is. But I think that post encompasses something because there is still that restlessness in me that sometimes my wife has to go, "Hey, relax. You'll be all right. Everything's going to be okay." But I don't know. I like it. That's a good post. That's not the one. That's not any of them that I thought you were going to pick. I like it.
Yeah. Like I say, I looked through everything. Trust me. I have one more question. I have one more question about that post that I put together around that post. And if you can recall, what was the last thing that you were on the fence about?
I'll get personal. It has nothing to do with policing, but it's my authentic answer, right? Is having another kid. I'm currently in that phase. I have two daughters and okay. I love them so unbelievably much and they are awesome. They're one of them just turned one and one's about to turn three. And I'm at the phase where, and my wife is too, where we're like, some days when they're awesome, we wake up and we're like, let's have like four more. Yeah. And then, you know, by like 8 o'clock when we're fighting bedtime after bath time, we're like, let's get a vasectomy tomorrow. And so it just kind of, that's just the phase that I'm in, right? As a 30-year-old man. And so it's just kind of, that's what I'm on the fence about right now. I don't know if that's the answer you were looking for, but that's a very human and authentic thing that we're dealing with right now.
Yeah. I like it. We were in the same boat because we have two girls. They're both grown now, but we were kind of in the same dilemma because, you know, we're like, do we want more? Nah.
Three girls, man. If we have a third girl, I don't know what I'm going to do, you know? So it is what it is. I love being a girl dad, though. You know, being a girl dad's awesome. It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of girl dads, that takes me to my next post.
Oh, segue.
And yep. Good segue here. And this was a photo that you had posted of Kamala Harris. And the caption read, as a girl dad, today hits different, and I like it. You recall that post?
I sure do.
Okay. And my question to you is, and you just mentioned that you have two girls of your own. If you had sons instead, do you think that you would have treated them differently than you would treat your girls?
I want to ask for, like, clarifying questions in terms of like, what do you mean by treat differently? I hope not, to be honest with you, but go ahead.
Okay. I'll put it to you this way. My girls always say to me, we were lucky we weren't boys because they know me and they know how I am with my nephews. I treat my nephews different than I treat my nieces and my daughters because I expect them. I guess my father raised me to be an independent, strong man. And that's what I try to instill in them. But I can't do that with my girls because they're my girls and they have me wrapped around their finger. So
that's good clarifying because I feel the same way because I want to say to you, I want to raise them that they could be the vice president of the United States. And I certainly will, right? And my girls are not of dating age yet, but right now the idealist in me is, I'm not gonna protect them. I'm not protect them, but I'm not gonna run off any boys or be cleaning my gun when they come. I want them to be open with me and honest with me, and I want to meet the young men or women that they bring into their world that they want to make mm-hmm. a partner. But the first time a young man walks into my house, I feel like my attitude may change a little bit. I don't know that. And so there's this idealist part of me, and then there's this realist part of me. I want to say, no, I wouldn't. But man, the three-year-old, she and I are so close. This is a true story. It's funny that you asked this. Last night, she woke up. She'd been asleep maybe an hour or whatever, woke up crying. And I went in, check on her, cover her back up. And she says, can you lay with me? And she's still in a crib. And I was like, I can't get in your crib. I've never done that. And so, you know where the story is going. By the end of the conversation, the back and forth, I am in the fetal position in her crib with her. And my wife is looking at the monitor laughing, going, I don't know how you're going to get out of this. And I realized this was a heart decision, not a head decision. I don't know how I'm going to climb out of this crib either. But man, being a girl dad is awesome because those moments right there, I don't know if my son would ask me to climb into a crib with him if I had one. I bet I probably would. Yeah. But who knows? Great question. That was awesome.
For the listener, if you've never listened to the podcast before, We're a different law enforcement podcast. We're all about humanizing the men and women of the profession and allowing you to hopefully get to see a side of this profession that you don't normally get to see. And that is the human side, because we're all human beings just like you, obviously. And that's been my goal with this podcast, is to try to expose a little bit of that in each person that I bring on the show. And I want to ask you about two more posts here real quick. And the next post, Chief, is a picture that you posted of Dr. Martin Luther King. And the caption was, "There are some things so dear, some things so precious, some things so eternally true that they are worth dying for. And I submit to you that if a man has not discovered something that he will die for, he isn't fit to live." You recall that post?
I sure do.
And my question to you is, what are you willing to die for?
Yeah, so I believe that what I am doing currently is a call. I feel like I was called to this job. I don't hide the fact that I'm a Christian. I don't hide the fact that I give all the glory to God for being a 29-year-old police chief. I give all the glory to God to make it into the academy out of 1,400 applicants and to make it through the rigors of police academy, being the smallest guy in there. Mm-hmm. I feel like God protected me on the streets of Fort Wayne. I feel like God helps me and ordains my steps here at the Huntington University Police Department. It's a Christ-centered institution. Its motto, Christ, Scholarship, and Service. And that it really is a bit of a personal motto to me. I'm working on my PhD right now, and I encourage all my officers to get their master's degree, finish their bachelor's degree if they're not done with it. I want to see men and women in law enforcement believe in themselves and not just get stuck in the 20-year cycle and beat up their bodies for 20 years and then go to retire. I think God is calling all of us to a higher calling. And so for me, that is this job. And so have I been in some pretty significant danger in this job? Sure. Have I gotten death threats for some of the things that I've said? Absolutely. But it's not going to stop me from saying it. Harm should befall me while pursuing this call. Put my name on the martyr list. That's how I see what I'm doing. And I hope that every police officer is able to find something other than this job that breaks their heart and they can wear themselves out trying to fix it.
Yeah, I love that answer, especially the part there that you talked about not getting stuck in the 20 years. And that reminded me of a story. For all of those that know my story, I didn't get into police work because I wanted to be a cop. I got into it because it was an opportunity for me to get some money that I needed to start a business. And I'm blessed enough to still have that business now, 28 years later. But I'll never forget when I made the decision to leave the department after 3 years to go start my business. They were hosting a going away party for me. And one of the gentlemen that I worked with at the time, he was known as, let's just say, the department asshole. And
they all got him.
And I'll never forget, he had one too many drinks in him, but he came up to me and he says, "Tony, I want to let you know that I envy you." And I looked at him and I said, "Why is that?" He says, "Because I could never do what you're doing. I could never leave the security of this job to go do what I really want to do, which is start a gun range." When he said that to me, that explained a lot. I understood why he was the department asshole. He wasn't happy.
Right.
He wasn't happy with what he was doing, but he felt like he had to do it because of other responsibilities. And when he retired, I ran into him and it was like running into a different person because he finally chased that dream some 20 years later. And he was finally fulfilled with what he was with life because he was doing what he wanted to do, not what he had to do.
Did he open the gun range?
He said that. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. Yep. And that was, he was a gun nut. He loved his guns. I mean, he was our armor officer in the whole shebang. And that was his thing. That was his passion. And, you know, even though he was there doing it at work, it wasn't what he wanted to ultimately do. So when you said that, you know, it reminded me of that. And I could not agree more. If you're an officer out there, realize that you are more than just a police officer. Don't allow that label to get stuck on you because you are so much more than that. And if that means that you have to leave this profession to go do what you really want to do in order to be happy, don't be afraid to do that. So I love that answer. I want to ask you about one more post here. And this was another photo of your daughter. And the caption was, "Dear daughter, stay loud, stay passionate, stay opinionated, stay strong." Hell, skip that one. Stay intense, love dad. And you recall that post?
I do.
Okay. And my first question to you, and you kind of answered this already, but my first question to you, what are you passionate about?
Yeah, I think you got it. But then there's this other side of me, right? I mean, I don't have just one passion. I don't think we should all just have one passion. Do I love collecting baseball cards? Absolutely. Do I love playing video games? Absolutely. I've got a lot of passions. I love being a husband. I love being a dad, but I also still love professional baseball and the New York Yankees. So all the Red Sox fans just turned off the podcast, but those are my passions. You know, I love traveling. I don't ever want to say I just have one passion. I've got a lot, and I love what I do. I'm so blessed.
That's awesome. I love the attitude. I see why you're in the position that you're in. And I want to go ahead and get into my next segment. This is what I call Random 7. These are just 7 totally random questions. Try to answer them the best you can. They're electronically generated, and I don't know what they are until they pop up.
All right.
Okay. So, so try to answer the best you can. All right. And the first one is, what do you try to avoid at all costs?
So I am, believe it or not, I am an introvert. I love being by myself. So for me, like plans of like parties or people coming over or me having to go to someone else's house, that is what I try to avoid. Now, the problem is the lovely lady that I've been talking about that I married is like the most extroverted extrovert ever. And so we had friends over last night. We'll have friends over this weekend. Social interaction, I say, is probably what I try to avoid.
I love it. All right, Chief, next question. Would you rather be hated or forgotten?
Hated.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, that is my story, right? I would rather people remember, not even me, but what I'm saying, what I'm doing, what I'm talking about, what I'm fighting for. That's what I want people to remember. They can hate me, but if they remember my message, I'm good with that. But I don't want to live an inconsequential life where at the end of it, no one remembers me or anything I did.
Awesome. Awesome. Next question. What do you think is not fair in today's society?
Oh, yeah. So I think we talked about it. It's the dualistic view on everything, that everything only has two choices, right? That you're either pro-life, pro-choice, red, blue, Republican, Democrat, whatever. And man, we can look at things with some nuance and critical thinking. That I think is what seems really unfair, that we're giving the next generation only two choices on everything. Knowledge and wisdom is a spectrum. And we can be anywhere in there. You can fall anywhere in there. You don't just need to say, I'm Republican, so I'm going to check all the Republican boxes on everything. That's not the way to do it. And same way on the left, you don't have to be so far left that you can't even think critically, right? You're just, it's groupthink mentality. Yeah, I, like I said, you just heard me criticize both sides because that's the way I feel. I'm somewhere in the middle and I want my students as a professor, I want my students to know that there's way more than two choices on all of these matters.
And if we would just shut up long enough to listen, we would know that.
Come on now. That's it.
Next question, Chief. Are people in this current generation less or more sensitive than people from past generations?
Man, that's tough. I never want to say this generation is this or this generation is that. Or get into the millennials and boomers and all of that. But here's the thing. I think almost every honor flight, I go to the welcome home. And I think there was something awfully, awfully special about the greatest generation. And I don't know that we've seen a generation like that before. And I don't know that we've seen a generation, or we will see a generation like that since. That was the perfect generation for the perfect moment in history.
Yeah.
If you know a World War II veteran, if you know someone who was in that generation, sit down, shut up, and have them tell you everything. you don't say a word because there is so much wisdom in the Greatest Generation. There's a reason they're called the Greatest Generation. And so there was an insane amount of selflessness. I don't know if sensitivity, probably, but an insane amount of selflessness. If there's a generation that I want to embody and be more like, it's the men and women that went through that, that at 19 years old, some younger than that, 16, 17 years old, said, my country needs me, I'm going to go, with very little questions asked. That's my soapbox. Those guys are awesome. If you don't support the honor flight, if you guys don't have an honor flight, work it out. Get yourself an honor flight. They're awesome.
And I have to say, I mean, given the way I was raised, like I said, my dad was a black man from the South who's seen a lot. And he raised me to, quote, be a man. And for me, I have to say they're sensitive.
Yeah, so I guess in that sense, that is, but I don't know, and I might push back a little bit because I don't know that it's bad. So let me, one thing I'll say is, this is a conversation my dad and I have had, and it's a tough conversation to have, to be honest with you, is his dad raised him that way, right? You be a man, you buck up, you take your licks, you move on. And that's how my dad raised me. However, society has taught me that it's really okay to care about myself and it's okay to talk about the things that I've seen. And so I have absolutely no shame in saying that I deal with anxiety to the point that I've had to take medication. And talking about it to a doctor, I'll never forget that moment of saying, gosh, this is intense. I can't turn my brain off at the end of a shift anymore. And there's a certain amount of swallowing your pride. And the second part that I think this sensitivity is a good thing is officers in my generation are finally going to counseling and talking to people. And where I'm at, I've been going to counseling for about a year and a half, and I vetted my counselor. She is the wife of a state trooper, so she understands a little more. but that's something that I think is important to officers to know, is that it's okay to be sensitive. It's not weakness. And you can find a counselor who really does understand the stuff that we see and the stuff that we do, and the inability to turn your brain off at the end of a shift, which is not okay. And you can get help from that. You can get relief from that. And that's something that I think my dad and I have taught each other on, because I've seen him. So he was a sex crimes detective for, 12, 15 years, something like that. And so he wore a lot and he still wears a lot, right? We never forget those things, but the ability to just go talk to someone is one of those ways that I think we're going to start working on the epidemic of police suicide that we don't talk about, because you know it as well as I do. Alcoholism and suicide are the dirty little secrets of law enforcement, and we got to do something about it. And so hopefully maybe a sensitive snowflake millennial will get people to get some help. So it's not all bad. It's not all bad.
I have to say, when it comes to that subject, I was that hard-nosed, suck it up, get over it person. And it wasn't until my department started to shift over and we started to become a younger department that I realized that that was not something I needed to be. Because when I started, everybody in the department had, well, at least it felt like everybody in the department was three times my age. You know, and I'm 55 now. You're in your 30s, you know, so that goes back to what I said earlier. It's nice to have younger chiefs like you coming up, because you guys are more in tune with this generation and you can bring that change. Because again, when I was coming through, that was like, no, get over it, get your ass back out in the street and do what you need to do. And there was one incident that I dealt with, and I've shared this story a thousand times on the podcast, but my last 5 years, I had to go in and work because of health issues. And I'll never forget, it changed me as a person. I hated people. I literally hated people. And I'll never forget, I went in on a Sunday. I was working the front desk and I said, okay, I'm turning over a new leaf. I'm not going to be the angry, crotchety old man, as my wife calls me. And within 10 minutes, that went out the window. A gentleman walks in, he and I get into it, and we go back and forth for about 15 minutes. He leaves, and I'm fuming. About 30 minutes later, a lady comes in, unrelated, to make an accident report. And she walks up to the window and I say, "Can I help you?" And she looks at me and she says, "Well, I was coming to make an accident report, but you just looked at me like, what the fuck do you want?" And I could not do anything because she was absolutely right. Because mentally, I was still dealing with that knucklehead from 30 minutes ago. And had I taken the time out to decompress and let that go, I never would have had that interaction with that lady, and which led to a citizen's complaint. But it's a progression, because something that simple, when you do that day in and day out, it builds on you.
Yeah.
Now you're taking it home. Now you're at home with the wife and your wife asks you to do something. Now you're getting angry with your wife and your kids and you're fighting and you're this. So you leave and you go hang out with your cop buddies and all you guys do is drink. Now you have a drinking problem. You know, so it
cycle.
I know that's extreme. Yeah, but that's how it happens. So, yeah, I forgot even how we even got to there, but I love it. Three more questions here, Chief.
Sure.
When you were a kid, did you ever have any posters on your wall? And if so, what were they?
Yeah, so I grew up just south of Indy during the Reggie Miller days. And so I had several Reggie Miller posters. I had a Reggie Miller jersey, had a throwback Reggie Miller jersey. I hope there are Pacers fans listening, because that was they were the best team. And if it wasn't for those darn Bulls, I want to see a mini series on those Pacers, the Jalen Rose, the Travis Best, Antonio Davis, Dale Davis, Rick Smith. And Reggie is the GOAT.
That was a great team.
I mean, we know Reggie is the GOAT. I don't care what they say. You're giving him the ball with 5 seconds left.
Yep, for sure. For sure. Now, that incident with him, and I think it was Spike Lee, where Spike Lee said something to him on the court side, and it just put him, I think it was game 7 of the when they were playing the Knicks, and man, did that just set him on a tear.
It was awesome.
Reggie Miller was different. Yeah. Now I have to tell you, I'm from Detroit now. So you know, we had the bad boys. So.
I don't think any Pacer fan is welcome at the Palace anymore. Well, the Palace isn't there, so it is what it is.
Two more questions, Chief. What's the best advice your dad ever gave you?
Leave people better than you found them. I know it's simple, but that's something that I always saw my dad do. Has persevered through an awful, awful lot. He had a stroke at a young age. He was diagnosed with lupus at a very young age and survived a liver transplant. And to watch him persevere and achieve the things that he's done, and still, man, I don't see hardly any negativity in his life. And I think a guy who's gone through some of the things that he's gone through, it'd be very easy for you to get real pessimistic about this world and the struggles that come with it. But watching my dad survive health issues and cancer and everything else that he's gone through and persevere and come out on the other end and maintain a relationship with the family of the donor for his liver. He's the most inspiring guy I've ever met. He's the best cop that I've ever met. And I think to bring it down into one is leave people better than you found them, because he takes so much time to just focus on people, and he wants to see his officers succeed. And that's something that if I lose an officer, but I get to see them go maybe federal, or if I get to see them go to a different department that they're going to be happier, I'm okay with that. Mm-hmm. I'm okay with that. Yeah. And I think that's what we have to do, is we have to be able, that's servant leadership. And my dad modeled that for me. And yeah, what a great question, because man, my dad's my hero. And if I can be half the cop he is, I'll be a good cop.
Awesome. Love it. And the last one, sir. What do you wish grew on trees besides money?
What do I wish grew on trees? That's a good question. Right, wrong, or indifferent. I find my value in work. I probably shouldn't, and it's something I'm working on, but I really find my value in work. And so that almost, as I was putting things up there and I was like, oh, what about this? What about this? I don't know. I like working for that. I like the achievement of getting able to do that or buy that, or, you know, I got that. And so my family is, they come from nothing, right? I mean, only a couple generations ago, my grandparents, one grandpa had an eighth grade education and was a pretty poor farmer, and the rest of the family came from the hills of Appalachia. And so I think my family worked their tails off to have what I have, and I can give that. That's the American dream. And so what do I wish could grow on trees? Let's just say something fun like Pez candy or cupcakes or something like that, because I got a bit of a sweet tooth, but I like working for what I got and building on that legacy that my family gave me.
All right, sir, we're going to hit the last segment here, and this is what my rapid fire round. This is what I call this or that. I'm simply going to give you two topics. Pick one. You don't have to explain why. All right. Don't give it too much thought. Just pick one.
Got it.
All right. The first one, bacon or sausage?
Bacon.
Tank top or T-shirt?
T-shirt.
Boxers or briefs?
Boxers.
Recliner or rocking chair?
Recliner all day.
Volunteer time or donate money?
Volunteer time.
Learn or teach?
Whoa, love doing both. teach for sure.
Loyalty or honesty?
Honesty.
High five or handshake?
Handshake.
Hot pockets or pizza rolls?
Oh man, pizza rolls, both are good, especially if you get the pizza hot pocket. My goodness. I'm not supposed to explain, but that pizza hot pocket is something else.
And the last one, sir, an eye for an eye or turn the other cheek?
Turn the other cheek every time.
Turn the other cheek. Chief Cochran, sir, listen, this was a pleasure. I appreciate you taking time out of your busy day to jump on the podcast with me. If you can just do me a favor, if you don't mind sharing your social or anything so people can go over and check you out and follow you and all that good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So believe it or not, I'm the only Kirsch Cochran on Facebook. the Kirsch on Twitter and Instagram. And I'm very thankful for this opportunity to travel and speak about what we're talking about, racial reconciliation, law enforcement, to both law enforcement and colleges and black churches and white churches and everything else. So you can check out some of those speaking engagements just by going kirschcochran.com, my name. So I would love to help anyone who's wanting to have this conversation in their community or their department engage in that discussion, and we can talk about it. So kirschcochran.com for that. I'm pretty easy to find. That's one of the benefits of having a name no one can say.
And guys, I'm going to put links to all of that down in the show notes. So please go over and check out the chief and see all the things that he has going on. Hopefully you can schedule him to come out and speak to your groups and churches and all that stuff. Any last words, sir, before we get out of here?
I don't think so. Just take care of one another, have each other's back, and be safe out there. I know this is mainly a podcast for officers, and even if you don't hear it, we appreciate what you do.
Again, sir, happy new year to you and your family. Again, I appreciate you taking time out to come on and talk to me. Guys, you heard me bring this up earlier, but I am going to be launching the Off Duty Podcast VIP membership real soon. And there's a whole lot that it entails that you guys are going to get for only $7, the price of a cup of coffee and a donut. So trust me, you're going to want to become a member. You're going to get extra episodes. And in those episodes, I'm going to be covering topics that I don't normally talk about here on the podcast. Everything from race to tactics to politics, you name it, we're going to cover it. Plus, you're going to get some other goodies also. But if you go over to the offdutypodcast.com/waitlist, you can get on the wait list for that. On that note, I appreciate you guys. You all stay safe. Happy holidays. Happy New Year to you all. And I will see you guys on the next episode. I'm out of here. Bye-bye.